Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 116 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Art Douglas Forecasts from His Gut, about the long-range weather forecaster's presentation at Farm Forum on February 5th, 2019. Douglas's annual preview of weather for the next few seasons is always a crowd-pleaser. Sponsored by the Washington Grain Commission, he has been coming to Spokane for more than 40 years. Evidence the largely farmer audience finds value in his words. This year, for the first time in his long career, however, Douglas's invitation to Spokane coincided with a federal government shutdown that lasted 35 days and meant the usual information he uses to make forecasts was not available. Douglas apologized for the omission of his data-filled presentation, but for my money, listening to him without his full array of PowerPoint props was an attention-getter. Rather than relying on a shelf full of details from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, he used what information he had access to and a lifetime of weather experience to deduce a forecast from his gut. I went back and listened to the podcast I did from Douglas's last visit to Spokane in February 2018. It was episode 61, entitled Mr. Weatherman Art Douglas Predicts the Future. It's available by going to the Washington Grain Commission website at wagrains.org, clicking on podcast summaries at the bottom of the page, and navigating backwards. He scored 100% on his call that California was going to be extremely dry during the spring and into the summer, causing a horrific fire season. However, his forecast for the Pacific Northwest was less optimistic than it could have been. Although he said the La Niña phenomenon we were experiencing at the time, that is a cool body of water off the coast of South America, was generally positive for the region, he was concerned the weather was going to turn dry after March and stay that way. I frankly can't remember the specifics of April, May, and June, but I do know a group of country elevator staff I interviewed at the end of harvest told me 2018 weather was about as good as it gets when it comes to the wheat crop. Check out episode 90, An Ideal Season for Our Favorite Crop. As you listen to Douglas's February 2019 presentation, I think you'll agree he shouldn't be apologizing for the absence of his usual climatological data. Frankly, I was more interested in a forecast made with a dollop of intuition that comes from 40 years of experience. With questions, Douglas spoke for more than an hour, and I could easily make his presentation into a two-parter, but I just came off a three-part series on falling numbers, didn't I? Besides, much of his lecture was taken up in talking about non-forecast-related weather phenomenon, like the movement of magnetic north and its potential impact on the planet's weather. For the record, magnetic north is moving faster now than it has in all of recorded history, which some say could signal a pole reversal. I don't have the time here, but Google magnetic north moving to learn more. Near northern Canada a few years ago, magnetic north is well on its way to Siberia now. I have included PowerPoint slides from Douglas's presentation on the Washington Grain Commission Facebook page. They provide a visual element, which is always nice, but you don't need them to understand what he's talking about. Douglas talked for 25 minutes about the status of world weather. He stumped me at one point, referring to the Crimea, which is a peninsula of land that Russia wrestled back from Ukraine in 2014. But based on context, I understood he was using the word as a stand-in for the wheat-growing area around the Black Sea. Because I believe wheat farmers are more interested in what's happening in their backyard than they are in what's happening elsewhere, I'm going to lead the show with Douglas's forecast and come back around to what's happening in the world.
Okay, let's look at the forecast for the upcoming spring and summer. As I've said before, I did not have access to any kind of government data when I had to make this forecast, because all the government computers were shut down, and more importantly, they were not collecting data in that 35-day period when the government was shut down. when they finally opened it up, they actually had to start processing all the data day by day, and they never got it done in time for me to actually make a final forecast. So what I'm showing you here is my subjective handmade forecast for the upcoming spring and summer with some analog years, and we'll talk about the analog years, and the help of the NOAA models. But it's not the true forecast I normally make just because I didn't have the data. Okay, this is where we stand right now in terms of sea surface temperatures and how they're going to impact our weather. With El Nino along the equator, there's a lot more evaporation with hotter temperatures. There's more moisture in the atmosphere, and that fuels the subtropical jet that then comes out of the equatorial Pacific, goes into Mexico and the southeastern U.S. With that cold water off the west coast, the jet is going to be forced further south, and then it's going to slam into the California coast from around that cold water pool. Then if we look downstream, though, from that jet, notice we have relatively dry air coming across the Rockies into the Midwest. So as we go forward into the spring and into the summer, this cold water pool is going to kind of keep this jet stream pattern going across the North Pacific and North America, which will favor more moisture in the west but drier conditions in the Midwest. When I make the forecast, I choose particular centers of action, what we call centers of action, where the biggest anomalies are. The upper graphic shows the upper level heights in the month of January. Bottom one shows the SSTs in January. The boxes are what I call my climate indices that I use in choosing my analog years. And so we have 16 boxes here, which are considered to be major players in shaping up the weather patterns for this upcoming spring and summer. Again, we have the El Nino. We have a lot of warm water in both the Pacific and in the North Atlantic. What's interesting on the 700 millibar heights map, which is the upper map, the biggest anomaly is in the Atlantic. It's not in the Pacific. It's not being forced from El Nino. So there's something wrong going on here. We have a weak El Nino, but the North Atlantic seems to be dominating the upper level circulation. These are the analog years that I selected in making the forecast. I'm just showing you here the top 11 analog years. Highest ranked one is 2001 at the top, followed by 1989, and then finally ending in 1974. Focus first on the column that says SST. That's the sea surface temperature anomaly. So the correlations that I'm showing you there are the correlation that year with this year's sea surface temperature pattern. So in 2001, the correlation with SSTs globally were about 0.87 with this year. Very high correlation. 1989, the correlation was 0.52. And then finally, the last year there in 1974, the correlation is only 0.36. But I basically choose to only look at years that have significant correlations, in this case, above 0.36 level. The real bummer in the situation is those particular years that I've shown, look at the correlations with the upper level heights. Yeah, they're okay in 2001, but then all of a sudden, 1989, the upper level heights were the opposite of what we have right now, minus 0.68. And in fact, all the blues indicate that those years were opposed to what's going on now in the upper level heights, but had relatively positive correlations with sea surface temperatures. So what's that trying to tell us? It says the sea surface temperatures are sitting here doing their own thing, the upper level heights are doing their own thing, and they're not communicating with each other. We don't have them lockstepped like we expect with an El Nino. Normally, the upper level heights are governed by what the SSTs are forcing on them, and that's not happening. They're ignoring it. It's probably an indication that we're getting ready for a pretty major circulation change, not only in the atmosphere, but also the ocean, because these two are fighting each other. And they're duking it out, and I really don't know which one's going to win. The upper level height correlations, if you look at them, are much higher than the sea surface temperatures. We got a minus 0.83, a minus 0.79, minus 0.78, in which we think are good SST years, are absolutely lousy upper-level height years. So it's an enigma on making this forecast. The two are not walking match-stepped or whatever the word, you know, the saying is. They're just out of phase with each other. Okay, I'm going to give you the NOAA forecast for the month of February rather than showing you the analog forecast because and this is made on January the 29th. I think this is probably a better forecast because it's a dynamic forecast that does a pretty good job for forecasting the next 2 to 3 weeks. But this is what NOAA is expecting in terms of air temperatures. The cold that was in the eastern United States has drastically reduced itself in the east. In fact, we now have warm temperatures, and all the cold is shifted back to the Pacific Northwest. It's what we call retrogression. In other words, the trough that was in the east has gradually been moving back west to the plains and then finally to the northern Rockies. So the cold's going to stay north. It looks like it's just north of the border here. You know, there may be some threat of below zero temperatures getting into eastern Washington, but I doubt it. I think the jet from the Pacific's going to be strong enough, it's going to prop the cold to the north. Precip-wise, as I indicated before, look at the moisture that's now starting to come back into California and also the southeastern United States. That's a much more typical El Nino pattern. And then finally, precipitation is below normal in the Pacific Northwest for the month. How are the wheat areas here in the Pacific Northwest, eastern Washington, Oregon, Idaho? If you look, pretty close to normal, maybe just slightly below normal, but nothing to really cause a problem. And temperatures, yeah, it's cold just to our north. It's probably going to stay up there. It's not going to come down south. How about the spring? The upper level forecast for the spring, March through May, indicates we're going to have a trough off the west coast. Going to have a minor ridge across the northern Rockies into Canada, and then the strong subtropical jet coming out of the equator south of Hawaii into the southeastern United States. A pretty good westerly flow into the continent. The upper level height lines indicate the flow is predominantly from the west, which indicates mild conditions, but not overly wet except along the immediate coasts. So the temperature forecast for spring, March through May, after this cold right along the Canadian border in the northwest, it's really going to warm up in April and May. So it's going to be warm all the way from Washington and Oregon to the Great Lakes. On the other hand, the southern tier of states slightly cooler than normal because of the cloud cover and moisture keeping temperatures down. And then if we look at the main moisture for the country, it's going to be there in the southwestern United States, the winter wheat areas of the plains, southeast. And then we have this dryness along the Pacific Northwest coast, typical of El Nino, in which the main storm track goes either way far north or way far south, kind of missing the coast. On the other hand, I see no indication, like with some El Nino years, I don't see an indication of any kind of severe drought this spring. So I think you're going to miss it. You're going to get some moisture in here. You kind of push along, and hopefully things will work out. The area that I might be more concerned with in terms of grain prices is the Midwest. Notice we have below normal precipitation forecasts through the central and eastern Corn Belt. Now, dryness in the spring is okay because that allows them to get in there and plant early. And I think they're going to have to plant early. They got warm temperatures forecast and dry conditions. They ought to be able to be in there 2 to 3 weeks sooner than normal. If we get into the summer, the forecast indicates that we're going to have a pretty good ridge in the northern tier of states. We're going to have a good moisture flow coming out of the Gulf of Mexico into the southwestern United States. But notice that dry air that's coming out of Canada and going down into the Midwest. That's a major concern. So if we look at the summer forecast for the United States with the ridge across the northern tier of states above normal temperatures from eastern Washington all the way into the Ohio Valley. So that says, hey, they're going to get some heat throughout the Corn Belt, the bean region. And with that kind of northwest dry flow, look at the dryness that's forecast here from eastern Kansas all the way up into the Great Lakes. So I think we kind of got a fingernail-biting situation this spring and summer in which dryness is going to start being talked about more and more in the Midwest, and there's going to be more and more concern for the crop. Is this thing going to get out of control and be a major drought? I personally don't know what it's going to do, because it's what El Nino is going to do is really going to impact what the jet stream is going to do. But based on what's going on right now, I think this is our best bet. Notice the moisture coming out of Mexico into the Central Rockies, kind of aimed towards southeast Oregon and Idaho, indicating a good monsoon season. And with that moisture, notice the below normal temperatures through the Central Rockies. My guess is, as the summer goes along, I think it's going to be a relatively cool end of spring. I think May is going to be cool throughout the West, which ought to be good for your wheat. But as I finally think we get into July and August, it's going to get much hotter in the Pacific Northwest. My guess is it's not going to be good for you. Maybe not as bad as last year, but given the average above normal temperatures here and the idea that the individual months showed me it was going to get hotter in July and then even hotter in August, I think this fire season will just get progressively worse.
When it comes to the presence of El Nino, Douglas indicated the weather phenomenon, represented by a warm body of water off the coast of South America, has been especially tricky for him to call this year. Yes, there is one, but it's very weak.
This is the current sea surface temperature pattern across the globe on January the 31st. And that box there along the equator, just north of Australia towards South America, shows we have an El Nino. We got yellows in there, but it's not a real big El Nino. It's like a half a degree above normal to maybe a degree. There are some areas that are 1.5 degrees centigrade above normal, but we have an El Nino. And that excess energy along the equator sends moisture and energy towards North America and really impacts the jet stream pattern. Another interesting thing we have, though, is between Hawaii and Washington, notice we have a cold water pool that's developed. Now, that is typical of El Nino years. A lot of storminess in the North Pacific mixes up the water off the West Coast and creates a cold water pool. Well, it's that gradient between the cold water and the warm water on the West Coast that also energizes the jet in North America. So we got that in play right now. Finally, if we look in the Atlantic, we have warm water all the way from Cuba north towards New York City. And that's really provided a lot of energy to the jet, too. If you look at the world as a whole, at least in the tropics and mid-latitudes, it's much warmer than normal. And the much warmer than normal ocean just has more energy going into the jet stream pattern, and that's why we've had pretty wild weather in parts of the globe.
Let's go to the United States. El Nino normally is quite wet in the southwestern United States. And in fact, it was very, very wet in September and October. But if we look at the last 90 days, it's started to trend drier. So in that 90-day circle there in red, below normal precipitation is indicated about 50 to 75% normal. In the last 30 days, that dryness has increased. And then finally, in the past 7 days, ending February the 2nd, a large percentage of the Southwest is dry. Now, that doesn't speak well for what's going to be happening in the spring. But we had a major change in weather patterns right when this graph was made. Since then, they've had very good rains in California. They've had good rains in Arizona, New Mexico. And also, we've started to see a lot of moisture in Mexico. So the pattern that you see in the bottom left-hand corner, this is an old pattern. It's going out. El Nino is going to have an influence again. It's going to get moist.
In response to trade tensions between the U.S. and China, Douglas began his trip around the world's weather by highlighting South Americans' production potential first.
If we look at the Brazil growing area, it has progressively become drier. The 90-day percent normal precip there, pretty close to normal, some areas near 50%. But if we get up into the 30-day period, we see extensive dryness in that graph on the upper right, all the way from the east coast of Brazil into the interior corn areas and bean areas of Brazil. And finally, over the last 7 days, that dryness has continued. So this is the peak period in which the beans are blooming down there, setting pods, and it's also when their corn is filling and has been quite dry. So don't expect a good crop in South America. The vegetation health index for South America is shown here on the left. This is for January the 28th. A lot of blue in Argentina, indicating we're in the upper 10% of growing conditions in terms of greenness in Argentina. Very good crop. On the other hand, we start looking there in central Brazil, where a lot of their corn and beans are located, and we see a lot of yellow. They're running about 30% of normal in terms of their greenness. So we know that the crop is not doing well. Let's look at Asia and Australia. If we look at the last 90 days, you can see how dry it is in most of Australia. The dryness continued in the 30-day period, and the past 7 days also very dry. If we look at India, the circle indicates where the main growing area for wheat is in India this time of the year. They've not done particularly well, but you got to remember that most Indian wheat is irrigated. It's not rain-fed. So if they're dry, as long as they planted it and they have sufficient irrigation supplies, they're going to have a good crop. Then finally, if we look in China, where their winter grains are in that purple circle, it has been relatively moist through the period, not super wet, but they're not having a problem either. So if we look at Asia and Australia combined, China's okay. They've had good moisture in the last 7 days. India, it really doesn't matter what the precipitation is because they're irrigating their wheat. Australia, on the other hand, we all know from the news reports, they're in terrible shape. Let's look at India. The main wheat area is in the northern quarter of India, and look how much blue we have in that area on the map on the left. Conditions running in the upper 20% of the past 12 years. So they're in great shape. Again, they haven't had a lot of moisture, but they're irrigating their wheat. The change from last year, again, look at the turquoise there in the map on the right, indicating this year's crop is better than last year. So India is in great shape. Change for the past 7 days, again, look at all the turquoise, indicating that the wheat is growing at a very steady rate. They've had normal precipitation in India, but their temperatures have been staying quite cool, and that's good for the wheat crop. Often they can have temperatures in the 80s and 90s, and that stresses things out. This winter has been cool with highs in the 60s and 70s. So again, this is another reason we're seeing the crop is in good a shape that it is. Okay, China. As I indicated before, China has been basically had okay normal precipitation this past fall. The map on the left indicates the vegetation health index for China on January the 28th. Most of the country has some light green in it, indicated that probably it's near normal growing conditions. On the other hand, compared to last year at this time, conditions are below normal. That's the map on the right. So even though they've had normal precip, it's not as warm and wet as it was last winter, and therefore the crop is slower developing this year. The crop is in still good shape based on the map on the left. On the other hand, it's running below last year. So maybe China is going to have some problems with its grain. If we look at the forecast, again centered for March the 4th, this is the forecast made on February the 4th, it keeps some moisture in the southern portion of China, primarily where the rice is and the summer bean area is, but it's not indicating particularly wet in the North China Plain, which is where all their winter grain is located. So again, it could be that they won't quite produce the grain, winter grain that they were expecting, based on the fact it's been just a little too dry compared to the previous years. Finally, the last part of the world that I want to look at is the Crimea winter wheat area. The map on the left indicates the last 7 days' worth of precipitation in the Crimea.
The yellows indicate they've had about 10 to 20 millimeters of precipitation, about 0.4 to 0.8 inches. For this time of year, that's a good amount of precipitation. If we look at the month of December, this is percent normal precipitation on the upper right-hand map. They had between 100 to 150% normal precip throughout the Crimea, a lot of snow on the ground, which is good for them. On the other hand, if we look at the fall precipitation, which is the map on the bottom right, the fall was very dry. So if we think about what the crop in the Crimea is doing, the winter wheat crop, it's not doing well because of this dry fall. They had very hot temperatures, no precipitation. They planted very late, so the crop was poorly established, and then all of a sudden they got snow on top of it in the month of December. So don't expect much out of the winter wheat area of Russia and the Crimea until we get into the spring and they get some warmer temperatures and some more moisture. But right now, based on the fact that fall was so dry, they're probably not in real good shape.
After I'd listened to Douglas's rundown of the list of countries that impact our wheat exports a few times, I started to wonder whether leading with a domestic forecast was really what was most important. What do you think? When it comes to soft white wheat, is how the weather treats us the most critical part of the equation? Or is it how the weather treats our competitors that is the most important factor? Is there a PhD student in the house? I never root for bad weather somewhere else, but I know it will occur far more often elsewhere than it does in eastern Washington. We live in a terrific region of the world, and yes, I say that having endured the second heaviest snowfall for February in Spokane since 1893. Nearly 30 inches fell during the shortest month of 2019, and no, I don't own a snowblower. Please, if you're enjoying these podcasts, pay it forward and do as I do. Tell a friend about the podcast. Ask to see the friend's phone. On iPhones, touch the purple podcast icon and type the first few words of Wheat All About It in the Finder. Subscribe. On Android phones, help your friend install one of many podcast apps and subscribe. And of course, don't forget, all 115 episodes of the podcast are available at the Washington Grain Commission website at wagrains.org. Download them all and listen on the go during spring work. That's all the time we have. I hope you've enjoyed episode 116, or what I called Art Douglas Forecasts from His Gut. Please join me again next week for another episode of Wheat All About It!
We love the land, the farm's our career, but make no mistake, we do not steer. Mother Nature's in the driver's seat. I'm talking life and I'm talking wheat. We're riding shotgun, we have our say, but Mama Green, she shows the way. We feed you.